I want to thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio!
All right, let's show them what we got here.
Commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of
be
more...
Be quiet.
I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look.
Just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I'm in such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace. Stupidity.
I'll do you for that. Oh, what? Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Welcome one, welcome all. And it is that time for Roundtable Live here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. Be rolling on until 4 a.m. in the morning Eastern time. New ideas, different hosts every night, different subjects every night. You never know what's going to happen right here at the Roundtable Live. King Arthur has nothing on us. We're going round and round.
Righty. Good evening, everybody. Let me check my mic level. That's probably a little better. I think I had it set a little low. Anyway, welcome. This is, of course, Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com. And this network survives by your kind donations. So if you can, take a moment, please. And any donation, big or small, nothing is frowned upon here. In fact, many of us hosts have donated or continue to donate to the network. And you know, we're in our 10th year now, so this is fantastic. And this type of media is what's keeping us alive, really, in this crazy world. This when the mainstream media has become a propaganda arm for the Democrats. I mean, it's just incredible. Of course, it's really a propaganda arm for the globalists. And they're just the, you know, the most Republicans are just as bad, if not worse. But, you know, we're seeing real change happen. Many of you say it's not happening soon enough. Where's the arrests? I've given up. You know, I believe they're still coming. We continue to get amazing revelations coming out. And John Ratcliffe is now the head guy at the DNI and was taken over Rick Grinnell temporary Rick Grinnell in just like 3 months released more stuff than the previous DNI guy did in his whole tenure there. So you know, this is, it takes time. The narrative, people are so incredibly brainwashed, they just are really falling for the television. You know, I've talked about my own family. Anyway, so be of good heart, you know, and you yourselves, each of us, are part of the change that we want to see happen. There's an old comic that I posted on Facebook some time ago, but it basically shows a guy in front of a podium saying, "Who wants change?" And everybody in the audience is going, "I do, I do." And then he goes, "Who wants to change?" And everybody's kind of looking around and not, you know, it's like, I mean, but that's the reality. We have to energize this. We have to participate in manifesting it, starting at the causal level with our imagination. So if you're listening to a lot of shows with a lot of dark pictures, and yes, some of those are real, and we need to be aware of what the machinations are, what the plans are of the dark cabal, as I've been tending to call them lately. And, you know, we have to understand that, but don't be disheartened. That's the thing they want the most from you, is to just give up. So anyway, we have a good friend with us this evening. Steve, welcome to the show.
Hey, 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 how's it going?
All right, how are you doing?
Oh, my God, I'm really happy because, you know, I got my truck back the other day, and although Uber needs me to fix my bumper, Lyft does not, so I got back to work today doing Lyft instead of Uber for the meantime, and I knocked it out the park. I had really great, solid business all day. Paid off last month's phone bill, got that out of the way. Now I need to pay off this month's phone bill and last month's car insurance. So I'm playing catch up.
Well, that's, you know, you're doing better than many then. Although the reports I've been looking at say that, you know, where the states where they're letting people go back to work, there's a real hunger out there, and people mortgage applications, and there's a lot of very positive signs. Of course, Trump's got the Federal Reserve basically has become the loan guarantor of the Department of Treasury. So he's got unlimited funds right now with which to apply. And of course, the Democrats keep begging him to be a dictator. And with that recent Supreme Court ruling that Obama's executive order was good to go, they said he could appeal it, but they didn't use the right language or something ridiculous. So, I really feel like good things are afoot. I feel like it's definitely more problems ahead for us. But in fact, Simon Parks was remarking that his information is that they've got a second batch of some pathogen, some biolab weaponized infectious agent that they do want to deploy and say, look, see, we told you there'll be another surge of the COVID. You guys came out of the closet too soon or whatever. So it's not all roses and unicorns and all that, but
right, and it never will be.
Never will. Good point. Excellent point. Anyway, I mean, that's just the kind of stuff I've been thinking about. But of course, getting back to work and having a lot of activity. So, in your neck of the woods, are people still wearing masks everywhere, or how are people acting?
Yeah, there's still a lot of people wearing masks. You know, I mean, some people, they're wearing masks just because, they're going into the store or whatever. Like, yeah. I go to the store, I keep a mask in my pocket, and if I get hassled, then I put it on. But that's about it. Unless I forget my mask, then I argue it a little bit. I've been, I got kicked out of a CVS. My local CVS, I was threatened to get kicked off the train, which was absurd because I was well over 6 feet away from every living soul, you know, and the guy said, "Oh, just put your shirt up over your face." And, I didn't say anything, but it's just like, if you're trying to tell me that my shirt is adequate, like, that's what I'm writing. It's like, you're going to tell me my shirt is adequate for stopping the virus, because if you're not giving me advice that stops the virus, just shut up, you know?
Well, yeah, but they won't ever use science. That would be too much.
Well, none of this is about science. This is about corporate policy, yeah. or whatever. And it's like, it's just like, yeah, that's for you as an employee. I don't do corporate policy. You don't pay me to follow your orders. I don't walk into your store and all of a sudden you are my manager. It doesn't work like that.
I haven't run into any problems here, but I don't get out all that much anyway. But, this is pretty rural here. So I do see a lot of people wearing masks still. But I haven't seen any more lines to get into stores or any kind of mandatory. Nobody's asked me to put one on.
Yeah. There's somewhat a decent amount of people wearing masks. I think only one or two people that got in my car today didn't wear a mask. Because I wasn't like creeping with the rear view mirror to see if their face was covered with everybody. And I actually had one girl who had to do a round trip, and she was wearing the mask on the first half of the trip. And then, like, I guess she forgot to grab it when she came back from whatever thing she was grabbing on the round trip, and then said something about it. And then we kind of started talking a little bit back and forth about the mask, and got into a couple of things. It was kind of interesting. She claims to be a Marxist. But she wasn't a crazy Marxist. So she's obviously one of those higher society Marxists. Also very young and attractive and rational behaving and thinking. So you know, there was some good common ground there in a sense. But you know, is what it is.
It's so funny. People think they're Marxists and they don't even know really what it is, what that means. They think it's getting money from the rich. You know, we're going to get ours now.
Well, you know, they look at Marxists as, well, they read Karl Marx and they get their beautiful utopian society idea out of it. And then they fail to understand why Marxism always turns into what the Soviet Union or the secrets that we are starting to that the left is starting to understand about communist China are, or Pol Pot, or pick your varying degrees of socialism.
Yeah.
I mean,
Dinesh D'Souza just came out with a new book, I think, last month about socialism in particular, and listening to an interview with him a little bit with Sebastian Gorka. It's enjoyable. It's surface level stuff.
Sebastian Gorka. Gosh, now they need Dr. Shiva, and now they've got their Indian triumvirate. Oh my God!
I like Dinesh D'Souza. He has the courage. If people aren't aware of him, just take a do a search term. But he's an immigrant from India who just came here and loves it here. And he says, you know, this, I grew up in socialism. We had food rations. We had, you know, you guys have no idea what you're talking about. And he'll go to university, college campuses.
You know, it's interesting. For one of my classes in community college back in the day, when I didn't have enough alternative sources for learning back then, I happened to have a conservative leaning. I think he was actually a Republican like professor, and one of Dinesh D'Souza's books was a part of the curriculum for his class, which is shocking in a community college in a blue state. I can't remember which one it is. I think it's on my shelf somewhere. So I became aware of Dinesh D'Souza way before he became mainstream Republican. So I thought that was pretty cool when I saw that. It was like, oh yeah, one of his books was in my college class. All right, that's pretty cool. My professor put me on a decent guy.
You know, truth finds its way, even in those situations. I'm guessing that was a few years back when you probably wouldn't find it there now anyway in any college campus classroom.
Yeah, but something like that. Yeah, we're talking about, Jesus, 05 or something, 06, yeah. Still my 20s.
Yeah, you damn youngster. Right? I'm sorry, what?
I said, I know, right?
Yeah. Anyway, I just turned 61 and I wish I could get the body of a 25-year-old or something, but you know, that's a kind of a joke.
Right. Well, I'm sure there's a number of things you can do, which starts with the gym.
I'll tell you what I think has taken the biggest toll on me is, other than the day job, the last relationship I had. I think sometimes I think she put a curse on me. She was definitely a witch. But at any rate, all those things we can overcome. And so if that ever was the case, it isn't anymore. It's a complex world, but, you know, it does. Life, especially the day. Of course, I had a pretty much of a grinding type of career, but paid well, but it was difficult work, challenging work.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of overtime and stuff. I went on a trip to, you know, I was thinking about, I worked, a lot of our customers were cops. You know, I was doing the radios and the light bars and all their fancy doodads that they stick in their cars. And they're great customers. I liked almost all of them. There were some cops that I was pretty sure were basically bullies with badges, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, they're really good people. So it's sad to see what's happening. We have in Atlanta, and also I've heard some places in L.A. that cops are standing in solidarity and not showing up. You know, somebody's got a 9/11 call, and there's nobody to respond. And so mm-hmm. it's right in their face. And, of course, this Democratic, I guess he's a, what is he, the DA in Atlanta?
Sure.
I think he's the district attorney. Turns out to have a lot of problems himself. And they fired sure. these cops even before there's any kind of an investigation. So it's a real tinderbox kind of situation. Of course, we saw this coming. Many of us on these shows have been saying that, you know, there's a real possibility for civil unrest. I mean, you can tell just by the language of the media and the Democrats. It's they're calling for violence and stuff, and then telling police departments to abandon their stations while they get occupied. I mean, this whole thing is completely nuts. And these people in Chazland, or whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. are now complaining that homeless came in and ate all their food.
Oh, okay. Well, golly gee, they're going to start learning what it means to have communist rationing very, very soon.
Well, you know, in the authoritarianism of it, they walking around with guns. There's been a lot of reports of like, for instance, if a black person sees a white person, the white person is supposed to give them $10 or something like that. They've instituted all this stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's a black supremacist state. If you are a white person in the CHOP, you are a degenerate. That's all that there is to it. You're a degenerate unless you're part of the upperclassmen who are actually like the white guilt middle class kids that are trying to have the sophisticated side of the government, in which the black warlords running the CHOP will not touch, because that's the shadow side of the paycheck for as long as the Democrat authorities permit the CHOP to exist. It works exactly the way that the Occupy movement exists, because when Occupy Wall Street started, specifically the one in Wall Street, they didn't occupy a public park. They occupied a park that was owned by one of those big banking corporations, and the bank was the one, or the corporation that owned it, that owned that private park, is the one that permitted it to be there. And so this is very much on similar terms. It's giving them the illusion that they have gained something, when really they are just being used as a political tool. And it's a question of the people that on the left that are using it as a political tool, do they realize how this is going to backfire? Unless the idea is that we're the fools that believe it's going to backfire when it's actually going to backfire on us. And that's why you get a lot of nervous tension from some right wingers, because they're not sure exactly how this is going to go. And they're just, you know, begging, you know, Trump to like, why don't you turn on the Gestapo, you know? Which is, that would be the backfire.
It's so funny. You know, this thing is, it's unsupportable. So this little 7-block area in Seattle. I mean, they're going to at some point be the truckers don't want to go in there. I mean, there's a huge backlash to all this stuff. It's my opinion, just based on my own, as I often say, testing the morphogenetic field. We've heard some reports of this, but I don't have enough to really say I point to any way to vet it other than my own intuition. But a whole bunch of these ringleaders have been rounded up, the Soros paid instigators that then pay a bunch of local thugs to go throw bricks through windows and such. And they have, you know, the Antifa, of course, has their old battle plan, and it's been labeled, thankfully, a terrorist organization now, which it is. There's areas that I think I was listening to a guy in Norway that said, hey, we stamped it out here and you better do it there in the USA. These are bad dudes. You know, they have a war plan. They seek violent revolution. And of course, Soros has been fomenting that not just in America, but all over the world. He's been attacking, or his organization. Some people believe he's no longer physically incarnate, and I don't have any information either way on that. But it's really backfiring. And then the cops not showing up for calls and stuff. I mean, when the mayors, there's a couple of mayors got really nervous and called out their whatever forces were still operating as far as police. When the protesters started hanging out on their front doors. So
right, exactly. And so, you know, and I like to take this moment to just remind people that the cops do not love you, because if they're willing to strike, you know, to allow the innocent that have a certain degree of appreciation for you and are stuck behind the enemy lines of these communities, and for them to call in sick because they're afraid to go answer the call, it's like, at the very least, show up. You know, if you have to let a dangerous guy get away because you don't want to shoot him, then let him get away. At the end of the day, you're supposed to be there to protect an innocent person before you're there to arrest a guilty person, because guess what? You're innocent until proven guilty.
I have a little different view. I mean, they're not, it's not because they're afraid. It's because they're showing solidarity with their fellow.
Solidarity about what?
About their fellow.
About getting prosecuted if they have to take out somebody and that somebody dies and their skin tone is not Caucasian, especially if it's black. That's what it's solidarity about. And it's the black community that's dealing with the most crime. And it's the black community that needs a security force the most under current law, because they can't defend themselves because of strict gun control laws in those communities. And they're abandoning them because the political parties are against them. And a certain portion of the violent population. You have to, like, if they're supposed to be brave and honorable and we're supposed to, like, dignify these guys the way Fox News tells us to, well, then they have to take that level of shit.
I just have a different view. I think they needed to do it right now. I don't think it'll continue long. I think they just had to make their point that, you know, if you don't back us up, that you know, find out what it's like not to have cops around. And
I know it's holding, it's kind of, you know, it's like we'll let the bad guy win, because yeah, you're saying that, but that's the cop assuming that the DA and the mayor and whatnot speak for all of the innocent people, you know, that quote unquote silent majority. You know,
well, it was the mayors and governors which told them to back out of their at those various precincts that got overrun.
That's right. And they followed orders because they didn't want to lose their jobs. So they followed orders instead of following the law, which would be to go after the lawbreakers. But they followed orders, which includes the order to stand down.
Yeah.
So they don't love you. Just remember that. They don't.
Well, my point is that the repercussions for these Democratic mayors and governors and the whole Democratic Party, they just keep failing at everything they try to do to take Trump down. In some recent polling, and again, polling is, I was listening to a little dissertation on it, somebody that was examining a lot of different polls. You have to poll likely voters. And of some 5,000 likely African-American voters, they found that Trump's approval rate, they said about 41%. He'll come into his second term with a mandate. I think he's just letting them expose themselves with all this, Steve, is my opinion is all.
You're absolutely right about that. You know, I still have tremendous amounts of faith in the Trump administration. I just hope that there's this certain cathartic moment about the whole quarantine and allowing the quarantine to play out this way, because right now I'm looking at it and it's just like, okay, all the Republicans, Fox News, conservative commentators all over the place, but Republicans in Congress, everybody is acknowledging that the CDC was wrong about things, that the WHO was wrong about things, then was sort of right about things, but is still wrong about things, and all these different things. And Trump is still like, you know, he hasn't come out and said, well, you know what, Dr. Fauci's been, you know, proven to be kind of abysmally wrong about this. The CDC is really doing things that are not helpful to this, like to at least say it, right? And to say, well, we're looking into like whatever, like to at least say, oh, I'm looking into it, to at least voice that. But instead, you know, he still stands by, it's important that we're social distancing and da 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 da. And whatnot. And but the only thing he's doing right in that respect is that he's standing firm on having like a regular rally, and he's got these liability waivers, which I think is a good idea, because I watch Metalocalypse and you can't go to a Death Clock concert without signing a pain waiver.
Metalocalypse? Is that a band or something? I like that name.
It's a cartoon show. About a death metal band, and this band, every concert, like half the audience dies because it's just the most violent concert you could possibly go to, which is what death metal fans like. So you have to sign a pain waiver to go see the band play. So that's what Trump is doing. Trump is literally pulling the Death Clock card and doing that. It was a fake band that had real music, and the guy who created the show can sing and play guitar, and he wrote all the music, and then he made a real band of it. And I've seen the real band based on the cartoon show 3 times, and they're effing awesome.
Oh, that's fun. Anyway, I guess if you like that, I'm not really a death metal fan, but yeah, so I think the thing is, people are so hard-headed, you know, like I was talking about with my own family members, and they're just like, they totally buy into the propaganda on the television, and there's no getting through to them, and so I'm stopped trying. But that's the challenge that we have to red pill. We've got to red pill a sufficient number of the population, and I believe that's happening. Slowly but surely. So I think that's why the arrests haven't happened yet. Although it's I heard a report that there's a sealed indictment on Tony Fauci.
Yeah, I've heard that too. And I don't know. We'll see. I think at the end of the day, like, I don't think that there's ever been a worry about Trump winning re-election based on the merits and the miracle that he won in 2016 under the Obama administration, with the DHS observing the election polls per se, and all the fraud that was unaccountable then. And I think that the real fight is the fight for the House in particular. So the red pilling is not about getting Trump elected. The red pilling is about flipping the House and at least holding the Senate. That's the real red pilling. And that's a very district by district situation. And it would be nice to see in these hard liberal black communities, a really great like communicator to the black population. And I'd love to see some black congressmen that rise, you know, out of the woodworks of this. You know, guys that got, they got streetwise, but they're very successful. They've been upstanding, or they have a really good redemption story, and they can make the pitch for, you know, for capitalism, for rule of law, you know, to say like, look, bro, I love my hip hop. You know, I even like my hip hop that's a little bit gangsta, you know, but that's kind of a stress releasing fantasy. Let's, you know, I decided to be cool and be civil. You know, it's like Jay-Z wouldn't have gotten where he's gotten in life, you know, if he committed too many felonies. Right. You know, he can make some argument like that, that appeals to people in a truthful, soul hearted way that speaks street to these guys, you know, and that'll be very, very transformative. One can only hope. I think that can happen. I don't think it's going to happen in a big way this year, but I think we might see one or two guys that lead the charge for the GOP moving forward.
Well, that you bring up a very excellent point, right? Right. It's not just about Trump. It's about all down ballot. And not just a House of Reps, which would be great. although, you know, half of those Republicans are probably corrupt as well. But, you know, we'll see. The thing is, there is so much more attention and focus on it, on the elections coming up. Because it's just a straight up, it's all out war. I mean, it's straight up war. And I do think you're correct. I think that potential is there for a huge red wave, which ultimately would be good. Not necessarily great, but definitely better than a blue wave.
Yeah, for sure. I think the most one of the most important things is that we have to have the right set up in place to protect the most vulnerable of polling places. Because I do believe that if too much of Antifa BLM is allowed to cultivate, and because they're not going to get their way with the mail-in ballot situation and the voter ID situation, and which will show evidence that they can't fraud the vote so easily, they're going to want to have a form of voter intimidation at the polls.
Yeah, they'll try every hook and by every means possible. They have to win because it's their very survival. Because if Trump has a second term and Durham does what we think he's doing and we start to see fruits of it, a lot of these people are going to go down. A lot of them have already gone down behind the scenes. There's been huge turnovers in industry and banking as well, with CEOs and presidents and such suddenly stepping down of these corporations and banking institutions. And I think a lot of the election fraud was ratted out during the midterms when the House, the Dems took back the House. I think what the Trump team does is they just kind of let them have at it. I think they use the same ploy with Vindman and the impeachment thing. I think they purposely leaked out that, you know, there was a potential, you know, we can get Trump now with this quid pro quo, which then completely backfired on him. Nobody said, you'll notice nobody said, well, if Trump's bringing up corruption with the president, shouldn't we be looking at corruption? And you know, how come nobody said that? Not even Republicans. I don't remember any Republicans saying that. Or maybe there was some, but.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it seems that by the deep state standards, for as crazy and unlikely as it seems, that this was the way that Trump needed to play it to look like he was giving them a slam dunk against him, because they kept going, right? It's like, you know, like the whole Ukrainian phone call that prompted the impeachment, and then he releases the transcript immediately, and yet still they saw fit to continue through the process and procedure, even though you had an outright fraudulent statement being made by the head of, what is he, the Judiciary Committee, Peter Schiff?
The Intel, I think. You're talking about Shifty?
Shifty Schiff, yeah.
Yeah.
Whichever committee, like, where he freaking, you know, where he paraphrased, you know, he said, in essence, what the phone call said, which is how he gets away with not lie with like, being able to say, like, to be able to say, well, I didn't say what was in the transcript. I never said it was what was in the transcript. It's what I said the essence of it was, which turns it into a metaphysical, existential, spiritual conversation. And so that's their, you know, that's their black magic at play. That's the dark side of the left-hand path.
Well, these people, listen, I am, you know, a lot of people are skeptical. I understand that. And, you know, until we actually see Hillary doing a perp walk or whatever, of course, some people think she's already been taken out. Although, I guess it was Mike Barrow was commenting on it, and he goes, Hillary still sounds like the same scathing witch. But at any rate, I understand people's skepticism about it. I think we just, as it's a, you know, Trump in 3 years has done so much. If you start, you know, really looking at what he's accomplished for the positive, and not everything has been for the positive. You know, I don't agree 100% with everything he does. And I'm sure most of you don't. But overall, bringing manufacturing back. I mean, I'm expecting to see in our second term, in Trump's second term, I mean, a lot of the advanced technology come out. I think they're just waiting on it. They had to get the main thing I've always said, I think, is the Federal Reserve. And now they've got that under their thumb. So the good guys, I mean, the alliance is really how I think of it, because I think of the Trump administration as he just being the front guy for a very positive alliance of military, business, banking, and also extraterrestrial energies, even angelic forces, really. But ultimately, it's a reflection of a deeper part of all of us that we're seeing this happen now, right? It can't happen without the consent of the governed, and we've had it exposed. You know, it's so funny. I was thinking back. I voted for Bill Clinton way back when, both terms, but it was during his administration that then, you know, we saw the impeachment, and I start to leak out. And during those 8 years, I started to see these guys are all corrupt. Doesn't matter if they're Republicans or Democrats. You know, what do we have following him a couple terms of junior, and you know, they hit you from the left and then they hit you from the right, and we actually have a real populist in there now. I think he genuinely is a populist. Thank God for that. He said, do you remember Steve when he said to the UN, you know, I'm trying to remember exactly how he phrased it, but he basically told them to go to hell. He said, you know, we're not gone down with the gold, with the globalist agenda. You know, we're for.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you know, like, exactly. And I kind of wonder exactly how things are really going down right now. Cause one of the big things that people are worried about with how the Democrats are playing the cop situation to kind of make these cops like stand down is part of the 16-year plan to destroy America. And part of that is the UN's Strong Cities initiative, you know, where basically, the cops are understood as a tyrannical, some sort of tyrannical independent force that allegedly the mayor of the city's got no control over it. And so the mayor of the city is saying, well, we can't have cops because that institution, golly gee, it's just an irredeemable institution. So what we need the blue helmets in here. And then they start treating America really like a third world country, like the way they've continually suppressed the African nations.
I'm sorry, I was muted. That's exactly right.
The UN, the UN blue helmet, like for the most part, they only operate in Africa. Like by and large, like whenever you think of the Blue Helmets and where, you know, you've heard their deeds, it's about some issue in Africa. To me, it sounds like the Blue Helmets are there simply to suppress the African continent. Sorry to interrupt, but I just had to underscore that.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, the plan was to take down America. My God, if Hillary had been installed, where would we be? We probably would be seeing those blue hats in here now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. We would have been
probably
like...
gun rights would have been seriously undermined, if not taken away totally on the left and East Coast.
Say again?
I said gun rights probably would have been taken away by now, at least on the left and East Coast.
Oh yeah, there would have been a number of FBI orchestrated false flag shooting situations by now. You know, we would have gone through like some serious crap. You know, David Hogg would have been like the emperor of Florida at this point. You know, in the Clinton administration. And dating Greta Thunberg, of course, and Black Lives Matter, you know, would have been, you know, tearing up all over the place, would have made their suburban invasions that they've promised, you know, happen, and all of this stuff. Yeah, it would have been pandemonium because it all would have been exacerbated by the corruption within the justice system that never would have been fixed, and a continuing decay of the economy.
And war, don't forget.
Of course. And war. And with our depleted military, you know, that means we would have had somebody would have been, you know, there would have been actual war on American soil. There would have been something, you know, like Russia maybe would have started to occupy Alaska at the very least, making that an issue, the whole nine yards.
Well, the covert war of China on America would have continued unabated. And so I don't know that there would have been troops on the streets or anything. But what Trump said in one of his I forget what it was, if it was a press conference or one of his speeches, but he said that, yeah, if Hillary were elected, there was going to be war on North Korea, and mm-hmm. he would know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I find it very interesting. It's so interesting with North Korea. Like, you know, like just a few weeks ago, there was the fake Kim Jong-un suspicion that he died of COVID. Turned out he was fine. Or something. Perhaps he had it, but then took hydroxychloroquine because that's kind of the theory going around. The guys like Boris Johnson are taking HCQ, and Trump is taking it merely as a preventative, like as basically a supplemental dose. And then just like this week, last week, they North Korea demolished that building that's in the DMZ where North and South Korea negotiate. Did you hear about that?
I did not hear about that.
Yeah. North Korea took down the negotiation building, and it's being portrayed as this escalation. And I think there was even like somebody in the foreign ministry of South Korea that was like hyping about it. The Trump administration doesn't – I'm not sure if they've been asked about it. The media kind of made a slight thing about it, but then was kind of quiet. And I'm looking at it, and I'm just like – I was a little disconcerted at first. And then I looked at how calm everything has been since. I'm thinking, unless I'm missing something, that this is part of the shadow deconstruction of the war. Like it may be no longer necessary as an instrument of peace between the peninsula, because the peninsula is moving along nicely with its behind the scenes talks, and they're just waiting for certain things to change in the global scene before they can come outright and say, like, yeah, we're kind of doing a two-state solution here on the Korean Peninsula.
They're waiting for probably a gap in the news cycle.
Nah, I don't think it's so much that because, you know...
Well, it's timing, anyway.
There's the Asian side of the global chessboard at stake with the the fight happening with the Chinese and what North Korea's relationship to China is, aspects of what's happening in the Philippines and Taiwan and Japan and that whole network.
I was kind of half joking, but I mean, that's the news cycle obviously is so filled up with the COVID-19 and now the riots and now the Chaz and all that. I think Simon Parks may be right. I think they may release another, try to. I'm skeptical of it if it'll be very virulent, though, because this obviously the COVID-19 was nowhere near as virulent as I think they expected it to be.
Hmm.
Do you know anybody that's had it?
My sister had it with a little bit of the sniffles. My grandmother in the nursing home had it, and she was asymptomatic. And she's got a very strong constitution. Her senses and her mind not so much, but yeah. Her heart, her lungs, and all that stuff, all her vital organs. She's an ox, stubborn French woman. So somehow she's with the highest death rate being right in her pocket, and she was asymptomatic. Like, that's how little I care about COVID at this point. My grandmother didn't even feel it, and she survived the Nazi occupation of France. So suck it. Grandma Purdy wins.
All righty. Well, old our good friend, you know who James Gilliland is? He has the Esetti Ranch.
He said I was about to say he's one of those ranches, not Stardust.
Right. He thinks we should have a council of grandmothers to help, smooth over these things, to help with leadership, in other words.
Yes. What were we going to call it? The old crone conclave, the OCC.
There you go. So anyway, I think in the next term it's going to be really amazing. I think we got still some very rough waters ahead. Possibly some kind of other false flag. Possibly a massive UFO sighting over major cities or two or three or more.
That I believe is going to happen in the in and around Halloween. Because that's the Samhain, that's the thinnest veil between us and the other world.
Yeah, you were talking about that when you joined me just last Sunday, I think. That's very interesting. Mm-hmm. The veils between realities are thinner now anyway than they've ever been, as far as I can tell. That's causing both positive and negatives because people can kind of dial into some darker stuff too pretty easy. But if you're choosing light, it's no better time than now. There is so much energy and help. I've talked about this a lot, that there's a huge amount of love for us from many very advanced light beings, or some would call angels. And they're beaming a lot of energy to us that we're not utilizing, we're not picking up on for the most part for many of us. And can seriously, help. They can't solve anything for us. The extraterrestrials aren't going to land and fix everything, because that would be against spiritual law, and it would mean we never. They would be depriving us of our opportunity to learn our lessons. Believe me, however challenging people think it is, we are up to the task. We can right this shit, and in fact are in the process of it, I believe.
Yeah. I'd rather suffer with integrity than cash out on a savior. So the aliens, they can stay all the way over there with their big technology that I don't trust.
Well, many of them are visiting people like me and James and such. And
I can appreciate that. I've had my dream time, put it that way.
I will comment on something from the chat room. They're asking who I was referring to. Simon Parks, very interesting fellow. I can understand having distrust of him. I rate him by the quality of his information. I think he's pretty right on. But I don't know him. I've never met him. I can't, you know, all of these people, we always have to be cautious with anyone. James Gilliland, I have met, and he's one person I'll tell you is just totally right on. And of course, there are stories about him. They say he has sex parties at his ranch or something stupid. And even if he did, which he doesn't, because I know people that have gone to his ranch. All right. Actually, some of my friends, Viking and Conrad, both went and visited there. And they say he's
free will, consenting adults.
Yeah, even if they want to say about that was happening, who cares? You know, as long as nobody's being violated.
Right, exactly. You know, it's like, you know, I'm satanic ritual abuse. That's we can all agree that's bad.
Yeah, I used to correspond with Kathy O'Brien, and I'm convinced she is telling the truth. I met her in person as well, and then corresponded email with her for a couple years. And she probably still remembered me. I just haven't talked to her in a really long time. But, you know, all that stuff's real, sad to say. I think her story is 100% genuine. Of course, now we're, you know, with the additional revelations. You know, people say no arrests have happened, but Weinstein's in jail. Or going to jail. I forget what his exact status is.
Right.
Epstein was arrested and either offed or snuck out of there with another body, some people think. I think he was probably really killed. I don't think they would bother to. But it's possible. People pointed to his ears and nose not looking right and stuff. And I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, like I, you know, until I can, you know, like, until I could get evidence otherwise, I have to assume that, look, Trump's playing the grand chess game, but that doesn't mean that every single move is going to, you know, is going to work out, you know. And if the other side has to sacrifice a bishop, you know, then they're going to sacrifice a bishop. And that's kind of how that goes down.
Yeah, and like, you're exactly right. Some battles are won, some are lost. The overall progress has been fantastic. So, and by the way, those investigations aren't over. For instance, Prince Andrew, I listen to Sean Atwood sometimes, and you know, he always wants to update us on Prince Andrew. Prince Andrew is just, ever since he did that interview, he just destroyed himself for all the world to see. He's having troubles. Nobody likes him anymore. And it's just, you know, the Queen discontinued his official duties for him.
I couldn't believe that he actually said something about adrenaline or adrenochrome. Like, he said something about his adrenaline or whatever. And I'm just like, really?
Really? I remember he said he didn't sweat.
Something like that. Like that. No, he made an explanation that involved like something about an adrenaline deficiency or something like that in like this. It's like a taped interview.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, are you just gaslighting like everybody? I mean, like I said, you know, it's one of those things where hopefully what we're looking at, just like how Trump protected himself from legal whatever, is that he's letting them walk into their own confessions by thinking that his administration is incompetent, and then eventually making the move. You know, but you know, like I try not to worry too much about it, you know. You know, I've if this quarantine situation has taught me anything, it's taught me to let go on a level that I was okay with. I just really didn't think was going to happen because of, you know, all of the great victories, you know, because for me, the thing that hurt the most was I wanted to get out and play. My band was just like, we sat there as a band, said, okay, we're tight enough to do some underground like clubs and whatever, where we can have a few bad notes, but we're pretty tight and entertaining. And, you know, just when we're getting ready to make phone calls to, like, you know, the bars and stuff, this hits. And I'm like, oh, the fates. Oh, the fates, you test me.
Oh, man, it devastated the music touring industry.
And wrestling. And wrestling. I know a lot of people in the indie wrestling scene.
Well, sports, obviously, in general.
Yeah.
Food service, you know, restaurants. I mean, it's just, it just blithely, you know, have no problem destroying. You know, you're supposed to quarantine sick people, not well people. I mean, yeah. I don't buy this. I had a friend I was talking to the other day who's going to come out and visit, and he's like, yeah, we'll wear masks, and we're going to get tested first. And I'm like, oh. And don't do it on my account, I'll tell you that. I don't even trust those tests. How do we know they're even accurate or worse still, tainted?
But it doesn't even matter. At worst, it's a 0.26 mortality rate. That's the thing. You could flip it so everybody's got it.
And if you take out people over 60, it's like even 0.0004 or something, I heard.
Something like that. You know, the official thing is 0.26. And the only reason why you've had as many elderly as you have died is people like Andrew Cuomo who imported the virus to the sick.
Most vulnerable nursing homes.
You know, it's exactly like during the Obama administration with the Ebola outbreak. They had that one American or whomever, and they brought that guy right in to, like, you know, Mount Sinai Hospital in Manhattan, which is like a block away from my ex-girlfriend. I'm still dating her at the time. And I'm just like, you're making my girlfriend ground zero, you know, it was infuriating. It was infuriating that, like, you know, everybody in the country looked at that and nobody said, no, keep them over there. Ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Well, obviously their agenda, you know, was to infect as many people as possible. I wonder if we'll find out. You know, sometimes, you know, people say, well, we'll never know. I wouldn't rule it out. In Trump's second term, we may get a lot of amazing revelations, because at that point, once he's firmly in for another 4 years, you know, it'd be like, release the hounds.
It won't be release the hounds unless he's got the house.
I don't know. He's got, he's got an attorney general there. Granted, Barr, listen, he was part of the Iran-Contra cover-up and part of the Franklin cover-up. So I understand people that say, hey, you can't, and I don't know if you can trust him. I just think Barr's a pragmatist, and being in the position he's in with the backing he's got, that we may see these declassified documents that just destroy a lot of these people, like Schiff and Pelosi and Schumer, and probably a lot of Republicans too, for that matter. I think Lindsey Graham is very questionable. So we'll see. You combine that though with the surging economy, with the manufacturing being brought back, with fantastic inventions along the lines of medical and power generation technology. This we may find in a year from now, Steve, we may find ourselves in a very, very different world than we are in right now.
Right. Yeah, I'd like to see a lot of that. I mean, right now I'm happy with some of the more low-tech stuff that we already know the tech is there. It's just that there's no investment in it, right? Like, you know, like we could flip things over to where all biodiesel and all petroleum-based products are flipped over to hemp production, which will not only be a massive economic boom for the Midwest, but it's going to be something that is going to make every environmentalist on the planet happy. Every industrialist is going to be happy that the environmentalists have gotten off of their backs about it. And you're going to see such massive like improvement in the quality of products with that flip from what's already understood of what hemp-based plastics and other hemp-based material is capable of doing, which includes for building material, because you can make concrete out of hemp and it's better than actual concrete. It's called hempcrete, and it's quite amazing stuff in some of its environmentally neutral properties. Something I highly recommend that everybody looks into. Basic things like that, basic things in infrastructure development. You know, because I mean, I'm a firm believer that there's two levels to why the tech has never been released to us. Level one is the monsters that control the tech. Level two is the monsters that we have been publicly as American people, and that releasing that tech would allow monstrous people to do monstrous things openly, because this tech can be used against us. J.J. Abrams' Star Trek deserves plenty of criticism. Absolutely plenty of criticism, especially if what you really care about is Trekkieism. But when I look at the story independently, the sequel, Into Darkness, which was the Wrath of Khan remake, that was taking the concept of what if you weaponized Starfleet? Because Starfleet is an entirely peacekeeping situation. They got weapons and stuff, but everything about how they're designed, how they're chartered, the culture and everything else was civil and peace. But there was an insurrection of sorts from a corrupt leader from the defense wing of Starfleet Command is in the plot of that film. And he was building a secret, secret weapons on the Hush side, as well as the super soldiers, which gets you into the Khan plot. And that's how they played it. And it was so soft disclosure, that movie. Very soft disclosure. And they also, they changed something in that film. When I saw that movie in theaters, when it fade to black at the last scene, before the credit roll, it had said in the movie theater, this film is dedicated to the veterans of 9/11. And there was a false flag situation in that movie. It was like kind of like part of the startup of the film. Now, this is a science fiction film, takes place San Francisco in outer space in the distant future. And it's got nothing to do with 9/11. And the film was dedicated to veterans of 9/11, which is a funny way to phrase it, because 9/11 wasn't a war. There wasn't a soldier per se that fought in 9/11, but that's how they phrased it, basically. And I can't find that on YouTube. I can't find that anywhere. That was like a limited thing in the theaters, apparently. Wasn't on Netflix, wasn't on any other version of the film. Just what I saw live in theaters, cut, removed as if it was a Mandela effect.
And they scrubbed it.
Yeah, and scrubbed it. Okay. So go rewatch Star Trek Into Darkness with everything I just said in mind. And you realize that whole film is a soft disclosure parallel to the breakaway civilization.
Yeah. I assume that's the latest in the franchise. I have not seen it.
It's not the latest. It was the second in the J.J. Abrams series. Okay. Then they made a third one that got panned even worse, and I didn't see the third one.
I did see the first one.
Right. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people just didn't like it because, you know, Trekkies need their Trekkie Trekness, you know, and he made it too much of an... he made it too much of an action film with like making it kind of like Star Wars without the mysticism is kind of what he did to Star Trek.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Now, it's interesting, you know, truth does come out. In one sense, they sort of have to just because they need plots. And what makes for a better plot than something real? You see all kinds of movies that you know, the Terminator movies have the AI, the different movies have revealed technology that or beings. There's one I watched, a science fiction not too long ago, that had the Greys and the reptilian aliens and the human aliens, which are the three.
Yeah, that was Jupiter Ascending, the Wachowski.
Right. That's it.
That one, like, well, you know, the Wachowskis are tuned in. They're very esoteric. Yeah. If you haven't seen Cloud Atlas is a really good one. It's very, very good editing. It's a very complicated story.
Well, they're coming out with a yet another Dune attempt, and
I've heard good things. I've heard very good things.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do. I've been saying I wish they would make a different book, though. There's six books in that series, and that doesn't even include the one Frank Herbert's son has co-written with Kevin Anderson. So there's a vast amount. And I'll tell you what, the last two books of the original six are the best. That's what they should make a movie out.
Sci-Fi Channel did a mini series of Dune, yeah. And they did get into at least the second book. The series for, you know, was pretty good. I remember it was pretty good. There were a few things that I didn't like. Like, I wasn't the biggest fan of like the costumes and a couple of the Guild Navigator. I always liked the Guild Navigator in the 80s film, the you know, because it was an ugly, creepy thing, and you know it mm-hmm. you know, and that's kind of how I, you know, because you know, it's the social commentary of it, you know. I agree with you, but you know, it's the politics of filmmaking. You know, you got to make one movie as a success. If it's a really, really big movie, like you're trying to make one movie for one book and the book is massive, you know, it's just like when they finally got the Atlas Shrugged movie made, they made it a trilogy for each part. It's because it's a three parts in one book. And even then, like, they ended up cutting out like three quarters of the story, mostly for time.
Dune's a very long book. It's like 400 plus pages or 300 something. I forget now. Well, I read it four times, by the way.
Dune, right. You know, I really need to read Dune, and I really need to read Lord of the Rings. Right now I'm heavy on the nonfiction because I'm looking at like real myths and magic and things, you know.
Yeah. Well, there are so many, you know, I mean, you're exactly right that, you know, when they're putting 60 or 100 million down, they want to be certain of audience reception, right? So they're not going to risk it on some of these books we'd love to see made. There's so many fantastic books. Frank Herbert was very prolific. I think I've got 20 or 30 of his books on my shelf right now. The one that I would pick up before Dune is The Heaven Makers. It's a very interesting, again, truth and fiction. It's a story about aliens that are controlling people's emotions and making them fight wars or have little dramas. And they film and these aliens, it turns out the aliens and us are the same genetically, that they're just more advanced, right? But they didn't know it, that they because they've been so genetically manipulated of them, yeah, of themselves.
They tap into that when Ridley Scott made Prometheus, the prequel to the Alien franchise. He made the same point about the engineers, that they had the same genetic markings as humans, even though they were kind of on the giant size. You know, like, you know, they're like their scale is like 10 feet tall on average, kind of thing. Yeah, that's the alien race that they made mankind, and they made, you know, and they were doing all sorts of weird science and things like that.
Well, that's one of my all-time favorite franchises, and
yeah, and there's a classic Twilight Zone episode that was also remade in the modern day, back in, I want to say, the 90s. When in the 90s remake of the Twilight Zone, and in the classic version, you have a story where there's a quaint suburban neighborhood in America, and the neighbors start infighting because a lot of the utilities in the neighborhood start going on the fritz, and they suspect each other of it at a certain point as people's phone lines go out, and then electrical goes out, water goes out. But then like a few different guys have their waters working while others don't, so on and so forth, and going back and forth until they mob up on each other, and they start destroying each other's homes out of spite. And then they pan back, and there's a UFO hiding up behind a hill, and these two aliens with like this device, and they're talking about this experimentation, this social experimentation of seeing if they were going to invade and conquer these people, how long would it take to make them fight among themselves to make them more easily conquered. In the remake, it's the exact same premise, except the plot twist at the end is that it's the government.
Yeah. Rod Serling, I have so much respect for him. He wrote, I think, at least 2/3 of the Twilight Zone episodes. And I don't know if that particular story was his, but he loved to put little moral – they were little moral tales, you know. And so many great To Serve Man, and it turns out it's a cookbook, you know, with these super tall aliens. Lots of great stories.
Oh, yeah.
Outer Limits had some good ones, too. I don't know if you remember The Man with the Glass Hand. Demon with a Glass Hand, I mean.
Yeah. You know what? Very few of those Twilight show-based TV shows I followed, although I was into the Twilight Zone, and then I really liked some episodes from Tales from the Crypt, which is kind of like the horror version.
Yeah, I remember it.
Yeah.
I remember it.
Mm-hmm.
They had Night Gallery about the reptilians. They had an episode that was Rod Serling's later venture. And reptilians that would come out of caves at night and steal women.
Mm. Yeah, isn't that the truth?
Yep. Anyway. I should mention, I didn't even say, if anybody else wants to join, you're welcome to. I don't know if Doc Who, if you're biting your tongue with something, sometimes he has a point. He goes, oh, I just wanted to get in to say that. If you wanted, anybody else wants to join me tonight, we've got another 43 minutes or so to go. We didn't have any top of the hour break there for some reason. I've actually finally recorded a bumper, and I just have to do a voiceover on it and send it in, and I keep forgetting to do it. And I've had it recorded for like 2 months now, but once we get that in, that'll help. You ever see The Shooter, Mark Wahlberg?
Is that? I don't think so. That's not the one that where the guy is like in a phone booth for the whole movie, is it?
No. Let me just quick. It's another one where real truth comes out. So they want to assassinate this foreign leader, and they pretend it's a plot on the to kill the president. So they get this former sniper to scope out the location. Then they kill the guy and frame him for the murder. And so he ends up on this mountaintop talking to Beatty. I forget the actor who plays a senator, and the senator's telling him there are no Republicans or Democrats. There's the have and the have nots. Well, you got to decide which one you're going to be. Very, very interesting movie, but it showed, you know, they're right on this film is a total false flag setup. And
the stuff's all over the place. Hollywood is a big CIA psyop, you know.
I can see Greenheart in the chat room has seen it because he goes, slow is smooth, smooth is fast. That's how he would tell him to get in mode to when he pulls the trigger. Anyway, well, I don't have any other real news to talk about that I can think of. Some news days are better than others. I've been trying to pay attention. I really do feel like a lot of good stuff is happening behind the scenes. I think the ploys of the dark side are just increasingly backfiring on them, including the COVID, including the riots. Because, you know, I mean, it came out on the news. They were piling up bricks in front of these storefronts and telling the cops to back off. And neighborhoods were getting destroyed. And it's incredibly tragic.
And shocking that there were no witnesses, you know, like not one video camera. Like caught a truck driving down the street that was like a likely suspect for the drop off, you know. It's all very strange. I mean, there's a couple of moments where there were a couple of bricklayers caught, including what appeared to be cops in one of them, but there was a lot of it done and nothing seen in the public eye about it. So
be interesting to see which element of the Soros administration paid for them. I swear these guys are getting busted though, even though we don't see this on the news. I think the plans were for the riots to really spread. And I think a lot of it got shut down before it could even start. An example of that was they definitely wanted to storm the White House, and the good guys weren't having any part of that. And once you take out some of the ringleaders some of the group, you know, it's the guy that throws the first brick, right, or the first Molotov cocktail. And then, you know, if they get rid of those people prior to them being able to take action, which I think is what they did in a lot of places, I think it was heavily shut down. And it'll be interesting to see if we do get some follow-up on that, Steve. I'd be very interested to find out which companies did do those deliveries. Where did those bricks come from?
Right. Yeah, and you know, the I think they went on because this was really heavy duty. I think it went on about as far as it was meant to go in all reality. It was good enough to get a strong narrative going with elements of success for the idea of defunding the police and flipping the script on what certain state prosecutors and whatnot are going to do in a you know, in an arrest-related death, so on and so forth. You know, because the Rashard Brooks thing happened, and, you know, that was obviously, that to me seemed almost like it was a setup, where they set up that cop in many respects. There's also a little bit of an element to it where the cop was in the wrong because, you know, like one of the, you know, one of the legit things about it, which is, one of the few legit things about it was the fact that, you know, as a cop, as part of, you not violating a citizen's rights, before you arrest somebody, you have to tell them they are under arrest and cite the charge you are arresting them for. So, you know, you can't just say, well, I think you've had too much to drink. Too much to drink is not a citable, arrestable offense.
I thought they breathalyzed him. Didn't they breathalyze him?
They breathalyzed him, but that, you know, but guess what? The cop never witnessed him driving the vehicle drunk on the road. The entire incident, in the cop's perception, happened on private property, a Wendy's parking lot, which is not jurisdiction of the Department of Transportation, which is what you are doing under those circumstances. So he still could have given him a DUI. His intention was to arrest him for a DUI, basically.
Well, I think he wanted to get this car out of the way.
Well, they did get
his car. Responding to.
Here's my point, though. Here's my point. It's the principle of the matter. The principle of the matter, which is the one place where the cop was in the wrong and turns the arrest into, a legally speaking, an assault, is that he never said, you're under arrest for driving under the influence. He needed to articulate that before he laid a hand on him, and he didn't. And that's one of the things that was brought up with the DA. So, legally speaking, the cop, by beginning to arrest him without telling him he was under arrest and why he was under arrest, was actually assaulting an innocent man. You can say it's BS all you want. Those process and procedures, which are not a difficult thing to ask an officer to remember and do, especially in a calm 40-minute conversation in the line of duty like that, is there to protect your rights. Okay? And we've been forgetting that because our love of the good job Trump was doing and the way things changed with cops, we forgot that, you know, nothing in substance, like, you know, in the actual law, in actual process and procedure, in written sense, actually changed. And so these little things can happen. Okay? And it doesn't make what Rashard Brooks did good, but if we're not acknowledging the places where our rights are not protected when we interface with the cops, we're talking about big problems, because it's not just as easy as fighting it in court, which is what you have to do, not with the cop, but in the court. But at the same time, that can get ugly expensive. Okay. So my point is that the reason why I brought this up was that there, you didn't see any riots break out over that. So, you know, the rioters are burnt out at this point. Maybe they'll regain, like, their continuity later on. But right now, they're kind of burnt out. Plus, there's already the peaceful civil marches that are still going on. There's still the properly First Amendment recognized peaceful protesting that is going on. Right.
And huge backlash against the mayors and governors that let it happen and stood down their police departments.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Exactly. So there's all these elements that are going around. And everything I just said about that Rashard Brooks incident does not excuse Rashard Brooks from stealing an officer's taser and then firing it at him after he had already broken away. All right. So some of these charges that are been put on the officer are BS. And I think that strong legal support is going to save him, because at the very least, this will eventually kick up to an appeals level somewhere. Eventually, it's going to hit a Trump appointed judge and he'll get out of that situation. And that's worst case scenario. But there definitely needed to be some level of punitive damage on the officer, because, you know, this is how our rights are protected.
Now, the George Floyd situation, as best as I can tell, that was another matter entirely. They both they actually knew each other. The story is that the cop didn't like George at all, and they both worked at this nightclub, which was a money laundering operation. And so they were the officer wanted to shut down the George was passing bills, according to the story that some are reporting on now.
There's actually another problem. A picture was pointed out to me, and then I double checked footage as best I could. There's two different men involved.
Yeah.
The man that you see get arrested on the street corner, and then there's the man being kneeled on to death. George Floyd had a short haircut. The man being kneeled on to death was bald.
Yeah.
Now, unless he found time while in handcuffs to shave his head because he was loony before he rolled out of the car to be wrestled again, then if George Floyd actually exists, which one of those guys is George Floyd? Because we're actually looking at two different people. There are two different people. My assumption is that the guy that got arrested and not killed is the guy that people saw at the George Floyd funeral.
The thing looks like an op to me. The other part of the story is that the ambulance rolled up, and instead of paramedics, other police officers came out and pronounced him dead on the scene, which they never do either. That should have not been determined until they brought him to the hospital. That's what normally happens.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. The whole thing stinks to high hell. The whole thing stinks to high hell, and that's the main reason why they needed to get the riots started before the protests could gain voice. And the rioters silenced the voice of the initial protesters.
Yeah.
That's what's really tragic about all that.
Yep. It'd be interesting to see how those, you know, I think the urban renewal, I forget what the bill was called, but was passed. So I think a lot of that's one of the things we'll see continue and actually accelerated is, as you were saying earlier, Steve, a lot of infrastructure, particularly in these urban blighted areas. I think we'll see a lot of positive movement in that in the coming year. Maybe we'll even get those maglev trains going.
Yeah, maglev trains ought to be easy. That's that I would put in the level of, like, we already got it, theoretically. You know, let's just do it, right? You know, I wonder how much of that stuff we can make. Have you seen that stuff where it's got that kind of that mist, and then it creates like this kind of anti-gravity sustainable track? It's kind of, I don't know if it's like cold, like it's liquid nitrogen or something. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't think I've seen that.
Yeah, it's this. It's a question of how much of the chemical, because it seems to be based on a chemical reaction. Let me grab it and show it to you and the chat room. Anti-grav track. Let's see if I
don't think it'd be liquid nitrogen, because you could not have that in the atmosphere.
Sure, yeah. Sure. It kind of looks like it. That's all I'm saying.
Maybe it's some kind of conductive medium.
I'm not sure, but it's got that misting to it. It's like, and they pull it out of a thing. Hold on, anti-gravity.
The Navy did release declassify anti-gravity documents. Was already year before last? I guess it was a year ago this last February. So they start putting anti-gravity stuff into trains and planes and boats and, right away there. And also, of course, when you were talking about hemp, I was going to chime in that that's like a trillion-dollar industry just waiting to be embraced.
Yeah, yeah. All right, here, check it out. I'm dropping it in your chat right now, and okay. I am dropping it in chat over here in the chat room, and that's what it is. I don't know if quantum levitation is exactly accurate for what it is, but you can see this thing in action, and you can see all the mist with it and everything else. But yeah. It definitely involves magnets, and then the plate that actually floats has the has this mist kind of coming off of it. It's like steaming off of it.
Yeah, I'll have to watch that after the show. Yeah, that they might be using liquid nitrogen for that, actually. To my knowledge, they have yet to publicly admit to having a room temperature superconductor. So any superconductors have to be super cooled. And I forget what liquid nitrogen's point is, but it's like
negative 90 degrees or something. Yeah, the disc that's levitating is the superconductor, and there's a magnet involved on the track as well. It's I'm looking at it all here on mute, and it actually points that stuff out. There's a sapphire crystal that is involved. A little bit of plastic wrap. Yeah, it's I'm just trying to find out what the chemical magnetic field penetrates freely. It uses quantum trapping on the superconductor. And I'm just trying to see where it tells me what the heck they're using, like why it steams. That's the one thing I'm trying to figure out. Continue. Sorry.
Speaking of quantum effects, met Dr. Victor Vernon Wolf, who said that when he traveled to Russia, he was shown some very advanced technology. One of them was a communications device, a little tricorder or whatever on Star Trek, that used quantum entanglement to have instant communication anywhere in the universe. Mm. Because of quantum entanglement. And with quantum entanglement, we've seen effects that violate the speed of light. That's a very interesting field. And this, I'll have to watch this video later. I think I've seen some stuff like it, but
I've heard that the theory with this is that you can send messages through time with a quantum computer that does that.
Uh-huh.
And of course, because that technology theoretically is just about like been discovered. And I think before it even kind of came out that it's been discovered, some people have been saying that Q actually exists and has been making these messages in the future. And that's part of some of the accuracies.
There is no doubt they're using some type of technology to see the future. You know, we've heard of looking glass and these other types of things. The quantum communication Dr. Wolf was talking about was just instantaneous. So it doesn't go backwards in time, at least according to what he told me. But yeah, that's that's an interesting idea, isn't it? Of course, we all remember the John Titor story. You remember that whole thing? Do you remember about John Titor, Steven?
I probably do, just not by name. And by the way, it is liquid nitrogen. I confirmed it.
Okay, yeah, I suspected it might be that once you explained it more. Yeah, John Titor. So this was, I think Art Bell had him on. And so this was... this whole thing got started on a blog, and this guy said he came from the year 2030, and it was a big thing on the internet for a while there. This was back some time ago, and his mom came on and said that, yeah, I knew it was the older him because you just know your son and all this stuff. And we never really knew if it was a hoax or not. You just never know with these things, though. Then, of course, you get into the Montauk books and that story with Preston Nichols and Al Bielek and Duncan Cameron. And that Peter Moon, really, with his Sun Publishing Company, brought to us. Did you ever follow any of that stuff, Steve?
Forgive me. Repeat the last part. I got distracted by something funny I saw.
Well, let me just quick. I'll just quickly say. So supposedly it was the outgrowth of the Phoenix Project that they moved to this derelict army base that had a giant radar dish on it and underground facility there that they then rescued the two sailors. Al Bielek claims he was one of the sailors or claimed, the late Al Bielek, I should say. So it was a whole story about time travel and this technology that was alien. They said the chair was alien, and then they wired it into this massive computer thing. And Duncan Cameron could open these portals by imagining these things, but there was so much bad stuff going on, including lots of little boys that would end up, they would just send in on these missions, and a lot of them never returned. And so Duncan Cameron, the next, when he got in the chair, he decided to shut it down. So he visualized this big giant monster that came and destroyed everything.
Yeah. You know what? I think I heard about that story.
And
I've seen that stuff has been used in various kinds of similarities as well. You know, whether you're talking about, you know, the MK Ultra program being used on children, which they tap into with Stranger Things, the Project Pegasus claims for that come from you know, like guys like Andrew Bashago, because they were young people in that. And they also use that premise a lot in Japanese science fiction, particularly in anime, because that's a tradition that goes back to the first generation post-war getting into animation in the 60s and such.
Yeah.
By the end of the war, the Japanese were putting like young teenagers in the planes, you know, they were putting them right on the front line and making them, you know, endure that in a fighting, you know, and fighting, you know, the huge American beast. And, that kind of fueled countless numbers of stories, and that's why you have so much anime today, which is young children fighting adult villains and going through excruciating rites of passage into adulthood by being exploited for war. One of the biggest you see that Macross series, Star Blazers, Gundam Wing, or Mobile Suit Gundam as it's known, Neon Genesis Evangelion, the movie Akira, big O, Gigantor. That's a super classic series, Gigantor. Astro Boy.
I do remember Astro Boy.
Yeah, you know, Astro Boy. I mean, like the boy's an android, but you know, at the same time, he's also like, it's basically a Pinocchio. Pinocchio story, but it's cool because it's an action story. You know, that's the Astro Boy situation. Attack on Titan is a modern interpretation of that. That theme is all over anime. It's some of the best storytelling, and all of it is a derivative of Americans as the bad guys. But it's not done in a way that, you know, that's meant to like guilt you, you know, it's, because they do tell these stories where they recognize their own faults as well. So it tells both sides, and, you know,
yeah, redemption.
There's been a beautiful healing process between America and Japan, through that kind of storytelling.
Well, Forbidden Planet. Did you ever see Forbidden Planet?
Yes.
The monsters from the id. I guess that's the same kind of idea. Dr. Morbius projects his subconscious demons and start tearing up the starship.
Hmm.
It's actually based on a Shakespeare play.
Interesting. There's a really... There's a kind of bad film called Galaxy of Terror, which it's interesting to watch because it had some good cast members in it, which includes a young Sid Haig, who was later known to play Captain Spaulding in House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects, you know, one of everybody's favorite, like, psychopaths who plays a clown. And so he's in it. And the thing that made that movie really neat is, if you're a James Cameron fan, James Cameron came in as the second unit director. And you can, like, he was so much better than the primary director of the film that you could literally see all of the shots that were done by James Cameron, because you could see where he took all these ideas from Galaxy of Terror and then put them into other things, like the Alien sequel, Aliens. You could see like direct borrowings from that. And part of the reason why I bring that up is that also there's kind of a projection of your fears manifest is part of the technology in that. And then a good movie that does that is Event Horizon, which is about a ship that's on the event horizon of a black hole. And they basically say that the premise of the film is that reality gets all warped at the event horizon of a black hole. And you kind of experience hell in that way. So it's a science fiction horror on a really cool, a very cool premise.
Yeah, that one I did see way back when. Mm-hmm. These ideas, many of them go way back. I mean, even Lord of the Rings had so many themes. It had nature against science. It had good against evil. It had psychic abilities. It had the different kingdoms, you know, idea of the dwarves and elves and hobbits and orcs and all the different species, races.
Lord of the Rings was a merging of Celtic and Norse mythology.
According to Tolkien, what he said, he was trying to create an English mythology. He said, we don't really have one.
Right, so, exactly. So,
yeah. And he borrowed from those, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, like, which wasn't entirely true either, just because, like, it's just that the the people of the United Kingdom had their mythology occulted from them, because all of those things from pre-Roman times, Neolithic times, effectively, was their myths. The myths about the Dagda and Lu and Odin and everything else. And that's what they did. That's what he did. He put all that together, put it in the context of the encroachment of industry, of industrialism, and as well as some aspects of definitely Christianity, I suppose also Judaism, thrown in there as well, probably some aspects of Islam as well. And you know, you have the men of the East, were kind of aligned with Sauron, which a lot of people thought was, kind of this meant to be like this racist jab, but it's, it's not exactly, the East is, the East, as part of Indo-European mythology, is where there was always invaders trying to come in from Asia and the Middle East, and trying to overflow their culture with their culture over there, and that's where a lot of the parallels in the myths to the giants come from, because many of the stories are in the myths are about Thor going to the East, as well as many stories in the Celtic myths are about the Fomori, which like the giants in Norse myth, are basically these demons from the sea that come out, right? And so there's a similarity to the encroaching of foreign peoples to conquer you, as well as it tying into things that happen on the spiritual plane of existence. So it's always multifaceted.
Well, it's in my opinion, it's about the best job ever of a book being made into a movie, or maybe I should say an epic trilogy like that. I thought Peter Jackson did a very good job on it. There are some discrepancies. Saruman actually lives past the Orthanc Tower and goes and hassles the hobbits up, and you know, but that was just, it was already such a long book. I can see why they made some of those choices, but overall it was very accurate to the book.
Well, what they actually do though is that because it's so interesting, because like I said, I need to read the books, but a lot of my friends read the books, you know, a long time ago. And so they were telling me, because they're the kinds of sticklers for, you know, easy, like keep it in continuity stuff. And it's one of those things where they're telling you, oh, the continuity here, like they did a really good job making the changes that they needed to make for it to be a cohesive story. And one of the things that they did was that Samwise is shown a vision. I think he's shown the vision when he's with the elves, and there's that Galadriel's like reflecting pool.
Yeah, her mirror.
And they see if you don't do certain things, the orcs are going to come to the Shire, and then they show you the thing that actually happens. And so they basically play it off as put it into a prophecy, so that way it can change the outcome over the course of the story.
I was pretty impressed with it. A lot of us had very high expectations, I thought they cast it extremely well too. I like Viggo Mortensen, if I'm pronouncing his name right.
Just about Viggo Mortensen, yeah.
Viggo. And I actually thought Orlando Bloom was pretty good And also the guy who played Elrond. I've forgotten his name, but Liv Tyler even wasn't that bad.
Yeah, no, it was really good.
Hobbit sucked. I got to see a little bit of it recently again, and the guy that they cast to play Bilbo, I just thought looks like a vacant. I mean, they just went for the money on that one. Sad to say. Dark, did you like it? I don't know. Maybe you like
it. You know what? I honestly liked it. And I did read The Hobbit. That one I actually did read. And there are very few things that they changed that I had a serious problem with. That I can't even really think of off the top of my head, except, let's see, what was it? They kind of didn't have Tom Bombadil in it. I think that was one of the things that was a little bit of a bother. It was on the cash grab side because they really didn't need to make a trilogy out of it, but they wanted to add all this extra content to, enrich it, because of course The Hobbit is a simpler story and it needs to feel as epic as Lord of the Rings because it's coming after, so you have to pad it up. And I really didn't have a big problem with a lot of the things that they did with it at all. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it was an enjoyable movie. I mean, just compared to the book and especially compared to the Lord of the Rings trilogy, I don't think it held up, but I mean, it was, as far as just plain old movies go, it was fun. I didn't hate it or anything.
Right. Right. I mean, there's still really solid mythology being portrayed in it, in The Hobbit, they don't really get into dragon sickness. Like, that's not precisely like it's not meant, like, they don't show it off like it's some sort of grandiose super curse that goes over the king, right? But the thing is that Smaug is based on the story of a dwarf named Fafnir in the Norse myths, who uses his magic to turn into a dragon to protect his gold, because he becomes one of the greediest creatures in the myths. And he even is connected to a cursed gold ring that there's a myth about as well. So a lot of Lord of the Rings, especially The Hobbit, comes out of the mythology of the dragon Fafnir. I recommend anybody look it up. And so the dragon sickness is based on the very thing that the gods went to war over in the myths about between the sky gods and the earth gods. And they fought because of the corruption of a giant who was a witch named Goldveg, and her name translates to the lust for gold or the power of gold. So the Battle of the Five Armies is kind of a similarity to the war between the Aesir and the Vanir.
Well, at any rate, we are coming up to the end of the show. Hey, thanks a lot, Steve, for joining me tonight.
Oh, my pleasure. I
appreciate it. And kind of have, talk about a lot of fun things that I don't normally, I don't really talk about movies, all that. But the media and the storytelling, I mean, that's a very deep area. I've talked in the past a little bit about the hero figure, and all that. That's a very rich subject to delve into. I did want to make a couple quick comments. The Canon in the chat room mentioned we were talking about Andrew Bishago. I have problems with him. He was going to be president in 2012 and then 2016, and now it's 20. I don't even know if he still talks about that. But for me, of all the all the people. He's one person I question whether he's really on the up and up. So, and maybe he is. I don't know. I mean, the people could just as easily question my story. And the same with the Montauk stuff. That's pretty wild stuff. If you ever read those books, Steve, they're really good reads. And you can think of as pure science fiction. But I will say this about that. Those books with Preston Nichols being the primary author is I think there's a lot of truth in them. I would keep finding things in them that I knew were true. For instance, in one part, Preston Nichols talks about ozone therapy. In another book, I think it's Contact with the Pleiades, he describes certain various different alien races that are involved in planet Earth right now and what they're like, and with the reptilians in particular, he was dead on as far as my experience with how they communicate, and like this light beam. It's hard to describe, but it's like this download.
Right. I would recommend our good friend and colleague, Bruce McDonald, his Light of Darkness book gets into the deal with the reptilians and the Pleiades, you know, the Pleiades, and I would also add in Orion, and Ursa Major. There are beings from those constellations at play, going back to not the beginning, but to the beginning of the current continuity of civilization.
Yeah, that's that cosmology. I do want to read his book, and maybe get him and John, I've forgotten John's last name, the guy who owns Stardust Ranch.
Right, John Edmonds. But Edmonds. Light of Darkness is with Rob Wiegand.
Mm-hmm.
Rob Wiegand is the guy who he has much more direct knowledge.
Well, this battle goes beyond the surface of the Earth that we're in. I've said many times, I can trace it all the way back to the reptilian-human wars when the reptilians found the Lyrian civilization and wiped them out, and they fled in a diaspora that then colonized the Pleiades and many other star systems to escape. And that battle is coming to a culmination right here, right now, in my opinion. Anyway, that's about all the time we have. I still haven't heard any breaks tonight. We had our wonderful friend, Steve Zerolith. Am I pronouncing your last name right, by the way?
Just about. I say it Zerolath, but I can understand because I chose a really weird name.
Zerolath. Okay, everybody. I think I did hear some music there. I believe the mechanic is going to be on next, or somebody. At any rate, somebody's been picking up these late night roundtables. You might even do it, Steve.
It should be the mechanic.
Yeah.
All right.
I am going to drop the server in a minute or so. I'm still waiting to see if the bumpers come on. I think they're still kind of working on getting those things all straightened out.
Right.
So anyway, listen, everybody, use your imagination to visualize a positive future. It's not going to, I don't think, going to be rainbows and unicorns and everything, but we actually have a lot more power then I believe the Dark Cabal at least wants us to know. And maybe that's how they've hoodwinked us the most, is to give away our own power. So anyway, ending on a light note, I wish the very best for us all. See you next time.